You're gonna have a happy one of these days, I promise you.
Altitude's undefeated.
Crack rainbow, punch it down, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of it.
I didn't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and starting to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
What's up, Rapids fans? You're listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It's Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. My name's Matt Pollard. Ted Lasso came back last week, so the first episode of Season 3 was kind of fun, I guess. Danny Wilson and Brian Galvan got their green card, so we finally know that the Rapids are roster compliant. And then the Rapids scored on the weekend, and it was fun for like 5 minutes, and then they had a no-good, very bad half hour plus. I'm joined now by a man who's made the time to listen to me whine, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
About the Rapids, who can't score in the first half, but at least they got a goal, and that was kind of cool. I'm not prepared to rhyme off the cuff from here on. It's good to see you, Matt. Matt's resplendent in a Brian Ching brand Paradise kit and hat, which I remarked before the break, before we started, was so cool that me at 46 years old probably would not be able to pull off that look in the street without, as Matt referred to, me coming off as a "how do you do, fellow kids" kind of vibe.
I got to do something to appear cool to some of these 20-year-olds and some of these ladies in their 20s, I should say, Mark. Rabbi, where do we want to start with banter stuff? I guess we'll start with, Mark, I liked the new format for the All-Star game, and it was fun playing Mexico, or playing, having it be MLS versus Liga MX and everything, and then I feel like just like the playoff format, that everybody kind of got used to it, there was a settled-in rhythm, and it was absolutely lit, and MLS decides to go and change it by bringing Stan Kroenke's other team into DC for their summer tour in the United States to play in the MLS All-Star Game. So they'll be heading to Audi Field to take on the MLS All-Stars, who I'm going to assume, with Jack Price hurt and with Diego Rubio having a slow start to the season, will not have a member of the Colorado Rapids on it. But Rabbi, what do we think? Are we mildly annoyed, or are we just going to be, are we going to bring this up the week of the All-Star game again, be grumpy old men, and then say it doesn't matter because the Rapids aren't playing, and move on?
I actually think my biggest beef about bringing Arsenal, I don't mind about mixing formats every year. I think it's fine because it's supposed to be fun. And I'll just take the historical view, which is as a former and still baseball aficionado and baseball history aficionado, more so than a baseball aficionado. The All-Star game for baseball was originally concocted more or less the way MLS does the All-Star game, which is like, hey man, let's just have some fun. Let's not overthink it. And I think the other cool thing about the Major League Baseball All-Star game that football and basketball are kind of trying to trade on now is the skills competitions are more fun than the actual game itself. And I think that that's really always been the cool thing about the evolution of the NBA version, which is that like the slam dunk championship is probably more fun than the All-Star game itself, and has been for like over a decade. And I think for MLS it's really similar. I think that the thing I was going to say about the problem with bringing Arsenal is the last time Arsenal came to the United States was against the Colorado Rapids, and most of their like big time name players didn't really get into the game until like the final 20 minutes. You know, you could, and for the media, I believe they only made availability to Callum Chambers, and the rest of the Emmerich, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was there, played 15 minutes, but was not made available to the media. I don't know who else was. Mesut Ozil still with the team. I think he wasn't.
Willian.
Yeah. And Willian was, well, that was the year that Willian was trashed the rest of that season. I mean, like, you know, so that's, I think, the problem with Arsenal, which is like, yeah, but are they actually going to play? You know what I mean? Like, is it going to be a bunch of scrubs? For me, I went and DC, by the way, is like the second closest team to me. So the calculus for me is, do I want to pay the money and do I want to drive? And the answer is not for a fake game. But, you know, like the skills composition could be fun. I mean, who can forget the year when they played, I think it was North America versus International or something like that. And or maybe it was against, maybe they played against Atletico Madrid that year down when it was down in Florida. And the dude from, the Portuguese dude who played for Orlando.
Nani
hit the crossbar challenge, which was super dope. So that's why I like the skills competition. Matt, do you have a different take, or are you? I'm kind of all over the place, which is kind of like, yeah, the All-Star competition is fun. Also, I'm probably not going to pay for it. What do you think?
I feel like if Matt Turner wasn't on Arsenal and an obvious option to where, like, you start him, you give, I think it's Ramsey or Ramsdale, you give him a break in that, then I think it makes total sense. Like, it's similar reasons that you would have had. I think Chelsea or Dortmund was in it recently with Christian Pulisic on there as well. Bradley came and started with AS Roma back in the day as well. I have to imagine if Leeds doesn't get relegated, Mark, and, you know, they still have their group of Americans together, that, you know, that's a viable option going forward. I you know, to your point, you know, the MLB All-Star Game, the NHL All-Star Game, all of these All-Star Games are effectively like marketing and let's have fun with it. And so if it's going to be a little bit gimmicky, I can understand moving away with it if there's a distinct American connection. It's not the Premier League team with an American I would have chosen. There's another option you have in London that has, I think, two players that obviously actually played, or, you know, that had a significant role in the World Cup, just like Matt Turner did, obviously. And I think there's a really obvious one. I don't know that by the time the All-Star game comes around, that team's still going to be in the Premier League. And then thus, those three players, one of whom's on a loan, two of whom are on pretty high wages and would be valuable elsewhere in Europe, are going to be playing. So it's a safe bet. I understand it. I'm still kind of grumpy that MLS took away something that was fun for us that I think is going to be really interesting, because off of what we've seen from just two games in Champions League, I think there's a decent possibility that an MLS team is competitive again in trying to win Champions League. And so you compile that over the summer, you know, going into the summer with an All-Star game as well. I think it would be another narrative topic you'd have, especially with the whatever the sponsored friendly that's coming up between USA and Mexico to continue that rivalry. Mark, the patron saint of this podcast, Michael Azira, is no longer playing professional soccer. He has taken over as the head coach of Blue Mountain Christian University for their men's soccer program. Michael Azira was an amazing player and loved here. Mark, when you and I were covering him with the Colorado Rapids, and obviously he went on to play for a couple of other MLS teams, and was a great Drew Moore-like veteran energy, maybe a little happier than Roy Kent at the sixth position for New Mexico United. Mark, I am sad that we will never get to watch Michael Azira again late night on ESPN+. I have no idea where Blue Mountain Christian University is, but now I'm very much more interested in their soccer program than I was 2 days ago.
Fantastic. Matt, how did you find this out? I mean, I see on his Instagram that he's changed his details, but it is still a deep cut. How did you find this out?
New Mexico United tweeted it out.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Wow. Well, yeah, he was a great player for the Rapids. He's always the patron saint to me and this podcast. But just one of many favorite Rapids players. I also put into Backpass this week a little tidbit about what a great guy Drew Moore is. Not like Drew Moore needs any more press for being a great guy, but you know, I think one of the things that that you get at a small school with a coach like that is he's just going to give that personal touch. And he's got that John Wooden quality to him, the pyramid of success, where John Wooden was interested in making good human beings more so than he was interested in making good athletes. And I think that was always a major component of the UCLA program. And it's why, you know, guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and other great players out of UCLA went on to do great things, not just on the court, but off it. So God bless you. Godspeed to you. And considering it's a Christian university, those are perfect phrases for Michael Azira. And go bring the word to those people in the best possible way, deep down in Mississippi.
Yes. It's in Blue Mountain, Mississippi, Mark. So I'll be honest, I don't know where Blue Mountain, Mississippi is, but in case you're wondering why it's Blue Mountain Christian University, that's why. Mark, should we get into this?
Let's review the recent unpleasantness.
Okay, listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids lost to the Minnesota United Death Loons, who were without Emmanuel Reynoso by a score of 2-1. Some interesting lineup changes, Mark. As we saw, it was it was injury crisis United. It was injury bug United for the Rapids on Friday when we got the injury list, a slew of hamstring injuries. And then a late injury add to that was Keegan Rosenberry, which would have forced a, at times a back four, at times a back five, Anthony Markanich with his first start of the season, and Lawson Abubakar in the right back position in a back four, and then Sam Nicholson going back and forth between the midfield, the wing, and then the right back position. Once again, you had no Diego Rubio, no Jack Price starting in the 11 as well. Max got his first start of the season in the midfield with Connor Ronan and Sam Nicholson. And then Darren Yapi starting up top. Cole Bassett kind of floating around there on the right. And then Marco Barrios as well. Mark, the Rapids had a lot of possession in the first half. But like as Robin Fraser lamented, as Cole Bassett lamented, as we kind of looking on as well. Once again, it was too slow in possession. It was too predictable. And even when they had moments where they got into good areas, you know, words like being more ruthless, being more brave, actually trying to do something, take somebody on one-on-one, that urgency and that impetus was not there. I guess Sam Nicholson had a nice chance on an off-balance shot that was set up really well by Darren Yapi, but there wasn't a whole lot going on in the first half. And I was kind of waiting for somebody to do something. And that somebody who did something at 48 minutes and 11 seconds was Cole Bassett, going from Cole Bassett to pole Bassett to, or Cole Bassett to post Bassett to goal Bassett, I should say, getting his first goal of the season. The first goal for the Rapids, chasing down a, you know, inaccurate cross from Michael Barrios and then dancing inside the box as well. And then everything went bad like 5 minutes after that because Minnesota got out on a counterattack. Danny Wilson rightfully got called for a handball in the box, and then Luis Amarilla converts on that. It kind of goes back and forth. The Rapids get a couple chances. They have a crazy sequence on a corner. Danny Wilson hits the post. That there was another chance in there. Anthony Markanich ends up whizzing a ball over out wide. Have to think, Mark, if that's Keegan Rosenberry in the same position, he paints that, you know, top corner on a rope maybe. And then off of that in transition as well, Jack Price goes down non-contact. Gives up the ball, or wait, no, this would have been afterwards. So Jack Price goes down after he and Diego Rubio subbed in like 7 or 8 minutes into his home debut for the season for Jack Price. Mark, Minnesota ends up scoring on that on a 3v2 for Minnesota, but Markanich, and I can't remember, I think it was Mekshu, stepped up well to ultimately cause that to be offside, so that goal was ruled off. Jack Price was down for several minutes. You could see him visibly upset and in pain. He was ultimately carried off by the two trainers with his feet up in the air. He sat on the bench, and just like Yaya Toure, sat on the bench until the end of the game, at which point the golf cart thing came and got him from the bench and took him into the locker room. Colorado Rapids have since confirmed that he ruptured his Achilles tendon. He would have surgery sometime this week. Maybe it's already happened. I'm not sure. And he's out for the rest of the season. And then Ralph Prizzo comes in for him, gives up a free kick in a situation where the Rapids could have been better set up defensively to deal with the transition play. And then Miguel Tapias with a fantastic header off of a, can't remember if it was Robin Ludd or who actually had the assist on it, on the free kick that ultimately converted it as well. Mark, that was the game. Do we want to talk about the game? Or Mark, I will remember this game in 6 months' time for reasons that are not that the Rapids lost or how they lost. How do you want to tackle this?
Yeah, that's all true. I'll just come at it a different way. Let's play a fun and exciting party game, Matt. I'm going to name the player. You name the reason they were out for this game. So, what name that injury? Moise Bombito.
Moise Bombito has a minor MCL injury.
Knee, very good. Steven Betashore.
Hamstring.
Alex Gersbach.
Hamstring.
Keegan Rosenberry.
Hamstring.
Yaya Toure.
Yaya Toure was out? Oh, Toure, he's still recovering from his ACL.
Yep. Marco Ilić.
Marco Ilić? Back?
That is almost a trick question because it's currently listed as a hip, although last week it was listed as a finger. And finally, Brian Galvan.
Ankle?
Groin. Very good, Matt. So we're talking about two guys who know the most and follow the Rapids closer than anybody else, and even Matt can't keep up with all the various maladies and injuries. I would almost want to say this team is cursed, but these are actually fairly normal kinds of injuries at the beginning of a season, except that there's just a lot of them, right? Groin injuries and hamstring injuries are really common at the beginning of the season, but, like, we were out three fullbacks in this game, right? And that really reduces you down. Now, that, for me, opened a door, which is, I thought Anthony Markanic had a really, great game, and really enjoyed him at left back, but I've been enjoying his work there too. And also the number of injuries on this team has also led me to think that starting next week, they may need to start thinking about putting their best players in positions that they're not normally accustomed to playing. So thinking about either Rosenberry or Markanic coming inside and playing as the defensive midfielder, and being the guy that swings the ball and shields the back line. That's one way to look at it. Another way is to start thinking about the season already in a much more defensive way. But, you know, we had a game where Lalas Abubakar legitimately started at right back. I mean, that was I found that to be a very odd choice. And when the lineup dropped and I started to watch the game, a bunch of Rapids fans were like, oh yeah, he's playing right back. And I'm like, no, that's not possible. They're going to be playing Sam Nicholson as the inverted right back on the right side. And after about 15 minutes, I was like, no, I'm wrong. Nicholson's up top. Lalas Abubakar is a giant rumbling, bumbling, stumbling right back. And it was very confusing. And so those are my early notes, okay? My mid notes are, you know, if you're going to possess the ball as much as the Rapids do and not put shots on target, you're going to lose, right? Like, they had 61% possession. They put three shots on target in the game. 12 shots overall in the game, not great. And especially the second half, they're just, you know, even though they were brighter in the second half, there just wasn't a whole lot going on there that was very good. Their passing in the attacking half was pretty mediocre, and they had 30 crosses, which is an insanely high number of crosses, at least according to the MLS numbers. The other things that I'll note, that some of which are going to be in back pass, which drops tomorrow morning, Yaya Toure, Darren Yapi, I mix them up because they have Y's in their names. Darren Yapi, another game where he didn't really see enough of the ball, and on the few chances he had with the ball, he didn't really do anything with it, and he still has zero goals on the season. You know, Diego Rubio got into this one late, but it was probably irrelevant, and we needed to get him some run and give him some chance to get around. I like Markanic's shot. I thought he did nicely there. I don't know that Keegan Rosenberry lands that one any better because it's a difficult shot. I mean, it's a half volley from long way out. And last thing, the most positive thing I'll say is, Matt, what was the expected goals on Cole Bassett's shot from that really ridiculous angle? You can guess it. I'm giving you a guess here.
Ridiculous angle. I think multiple defenders between him and the goal in the direction that he shot. I'm going to say under 6% chance.
Oh, yeah. It was 0.03. He had or 0.025, if you're really being pedantic, which is, that's really low. I mean, 0.01 is a shot that, like, you know, guys really just very rarely hit. And generally, when you see a guy hit a 0.01 shot, you look at it and you go, he shouldn't have shot that. Like, that was a wasted try. There's no one's gonna score that. And when Bassett took that, I was like, wow, that is not going in. And somehow it evaded the goalkeeper's hand. It toinked the post and went right back in. So that was awesome. Especially considering Cole Bassett's difficulty a couple seasons ago getting the nickname Pull Bassett because of his propensity to hit the post and toink out. It was great to have him see one toink in for once. But not good enough, not enough shots. Not dangerous enough around the goal mouth. You know, not a lot of really high quality chances. And you know, the last thing is the mistake by Danny Wilson was, I wouldn't say unforgivable, but this is a team that has been on very close margins for more than a year. They can't make little mistakes and win games. They have to minimize those down to zero, or they're going to lose everything.
Where the heck do I even want to start? So we're talking about just the game, Mark. So not yet the season,
not the injury,
the implications of it yet. Okay. I'll start with my bad thing. One thing that again happened in the crowd in the 70th minute, the Rapids PA announcer, public address announcer, came on and issued a statement regarding discriminatory and homophobic chants and the club standing against that and everything. I didn't get the full statement. It was read relatively quickly, and then we were freaking out and everything. I got it confirmed from a Rapid spokesperson that that was in response to the P-word chant again being heard in the stadium. The language that I heard it was described as was at a small scale. To me, that means probably smaller, definitely smaller than what was heard and what was said and the volume of the home opener against Sporting Kansas City. This could have been one person somewhere randomly in the stadium, and it could have even been heard and reported by a member of the staff, not necessarily a fan. So I got a lot of comments when Brendan Plone and I reported that at halftime mark of the game on Saturday, of people saying I didn't hear it or saying that it was not picked up on the broadcast. This could have been, again, it could have been one person one time and picked up by one usher who was 10 feet away and then not heard anywhere else. I don't know what more I can say about it, given what we said about this last time and everything. That word has no place here in this club. It has no place in the sport. For me, it has no place in society at all. I wrote a big piece on the protocol and what could happen next and what the club and what the league are trying to do on that over at burgundywave.com. I'll include a link in the show notes for those of you who want to hear it as well. Mark, it's disappointing that it's back-to-back home games where we've needed to have this kind of thing. That being said, I guess the fact that, again, it was heard at a smaller scale, and then two people report on it, and then a bunch of other people saying, well, I didn't hear it, like, where's that coming from, and everything, I guess that's incremental improvement from the home opener. And I want to be clear, like, there's no indication whatsoever from either of these incidences, from either of these home games so far, folks, that this was people in and around closely involved with C-38 or the sections in the South Stand as well. These appear to be independent actors, or at least not people officially involved in that. And I know there's been times in the past where immediately there's been finger pointing towards the supporters group when that comes out. And some of that has been presumptive. I want to be clear that there's no indication that what was heard on Saturday was like that. I hope that we never have to talk about this, but unfortunately it's going to keep coming up. And for those of you who want to know, as far as the protocol is concerned, that would go into effect once it is widespread. And the decisions about where to take it with that protocol are under the decision of the head referee, the venue operators, and then ultimately the league would also get involved in that. And there is an outcome when that goes, you know, the limit as the P-word chant goes to infinity, folks. There's an outcome where the game is abandoned, and there's kind of a question of what happens after that game is abandoned. And there's a precedent with what FIFA and CONCACAF did in punishing the Mexican Federation for the P-word chant in the last couple of years between Nations League and World Cup qualifying, that there are ramifications there for the sporting body that's overseeing the fan base that is committing that action. And so if you'd like that to not happen, amongst many other reasons you shouldn't be doing that, don't say the P-word. Coming back to the game, Mark, you know, I think we said it about what was missing from an attack standpoint. I think Mark, middle of last summer, Robin Fraser was starting to sound like a broken record in terms of, well, we just clean up what we do, simple defensive mistakes that we talk about all the time that we're trying to eradicate, then defensively we'll be better. And if we just find a way to execute the good opportunities we're getting from an attacking standpoint, and then thus where we are able to outplay opponents from an XG standpoint, we actually outplay them on the scoreboard, then everything's going to be fine. And Mark, we started to notice it maybe like 10 games in to last season. And then by the time it got into the summer, it's like okay, this is a trend, not a blip. And then by the time it was the middle of August and everything, it was like, oh my God, like, how is this still happening? How is the club not figured this out or fixed it? Is this just who they are at this point? Mark, Robin's starting to sound like a broken record. somewhat with the injuries, certainly with the chance creation and what's going on offensively. I'd say less so from a defensive standpoint. You know, the fact that going into this game, you had two games where you had a clean sheet and then one goal on a semi-fluky play, or at least a low probability chance for San Jose and everything. You could say some of the defensive structural issues that were obvious with Seattle were taken care of and everything, but just still, this is a team that finds ways to make defensive mistakes, and they get punished in ways where those opponents could make similar mistakes, and they do not get punished in that same way. I don't know that there's anything that you could do better. You know, that set piece that they scored for the winning goal was, I think, perfectly executed. I don't know, other than knowing it was coming and then having somebody in front of Tapias to interfere with that header, I don't know that he placed it about as perfectly as he could have in that regard, but both of those plays come in transition. I think one was off of a set piece, so the Rapids are scrambling to get back, and, you know, Danny Wilson commits the handball. Is that preventable? Yes. Should he know better? Yes. But at the same time, he and Lawless just make these kinds of mistakes, and we've seen it for almost a year and a half now, and I think at some point we have to acknowledge this isn't fluky, or this isn't as simple as don't make these mistakes and we don't give up goals. At some point, this is just who they are at this point. Snake bitten, you know, unreliable, bad bounces, or what have you. And so I think Robin Fraser was right when he was pointing out the thing that he was upset about is how they handled those situations, the defensive situations that led to the transition plays, that led to the chance where Danny Wilson gets called for a handball, and then the situation where Ralph Prizzo, who subbed on for Jack Price, has to commit the tactical foul that leads to the free kick opportunity, that leads to the winning goal as well. And I should point out, Mark, if I think about two players that either from the run of play or on set pieces, and we're talking about Jack Price being there in a corner that would deal with that as well, I think Keegan Rosenberry is in a better position to deal with those situations than an Anthony Markanich or Lalas Abubakar potentially out of position as well. Or if anything, Keegan's gonna see that opportunity, win the 50-50 ball, and then try and score a goal. Worst case scenario, it sails into 117 and goes out for a goal kick. You know, go get back and set yourselves up defensively. So while I'm upset with the plays that ultimately led to the goals, I think ultimately, again, these were fires that the team could have prevented, and injuries and absences that they had put them in. They could have better dealt with those if they had their appropriate personnel on the field, but everybody else is dealing without injuries. You didn't have to deal with Emmanuel Reynoso in this game. You could have handled it differently. Mark, anything else that we want to say about this game itself, or shall we move on to the bigger picture stuff?
We can move on to the big picture. I mean, there's not a lot of ways to say they didn't play a very good team and they didn't win. Because the other thing is, and we'll talk about this down the road, but like, they're about to start facing some really tough opposition in the Western Conference. They didn't play the best teams in the Western Conference in the first four matches. They played lesser teams. And now we're starting to see the meat of the rotation, and we're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they've seen, like, if I had to guess right now, I'd have to go back and check my preseason prediction, but in their first four games, I think I only have Seattle in those four making the playoffs. Or maybe, I think Sporting Kansas City and San Jose, I might have had being the two teams that were making the playoffs in the expanded playoffs when I did it. I think as long as Emmanuel Reynoso is not with Minnesota United, I don't know how they make the playoffs without him personally in that regard. Yeah. But, you know.
And same regarding Sporting. Like, I think Sporting is a playoff team, but they're missing the two elements that make them a playoff team, which are Gadi Kinda and Alan Pulido, who are not back yet. So they're missing all their big ticket items, and they still, the Rapids still couldn't get through them. San Jose aren't a very good team, and the Rapids couldn't get through them. Minnesota aren't a good team, and the Rapids couldn't get through them. Yeah, I mean, Seattle, the Rapids were expected to lose. I don't think they were expected to lose by four, though, so we'll see.
Yeah, so, you know,
big picture.
Big picture, Mark, I'm officially, now that we have clarity on Jack Price's situation, I'd like to amend my preseason prediction of the Rapids finishing seventh and making both the old and the new playoff format. Mark, I don't think this team makes the playoffs. I will look up when I have a moment the stat that Brendan Plone pulled up recently. Actually, I think I have it right now that I retweeted. So courtesy of the stats genius @_EmilioGonzalez, who's on the comms team for the Colorado Rapids, Mark, Brendan Plone of the Denver Post tweets out, the Colorado Rapids points per game total with and without Jack Price since his arrival in 2018 in MLS regular season points per game with Price making an appearance, 1.49. Mark, that is comfortably a playoff team in the old playoff format. Points per game without, 0.91. That is comfortably not a playoff team. And then in all comps, which I think for the purposes of this conversation is a little bit striated because that's including U.S. Open Cup where the Rapids normally rotate and Price might be the only one on there. And then also CCL where obviously, you know, was a different competition that was played in conjunction with league play. Those numbers are 1.42 and 0.86 as well. Mark, if you're averaging less than a point per game, you are in the conversation for the wooden spoon in the modern era of Major League Soccer. And if you're averaging at or close to 1.5 points per game, you are comfortably a playoff team. You are not sneaking into that 7th seed or that 9th seed or anything. And so I think the stats bear it true, Mark. And I think anything barring Diego Rubio continuing picking up where he left off over the course of the season from what he did last year, keeping those numbers up from a goal contribution standpoint. But fundamentally, a lot of other things have to get better about the Colorado Rapids. I think every single player that's been involved in the attack has to improve in order for that to happen. And I'd include Darren Yapi on that, Mark, for the piece that I put up for Burgundy Wave a couple weeks ago. Now and everything, one thing that everyone I spoke to, and you asked him, the thing that he got better from the end of last season to end of this season was his finishing. And what's the one thing that we haven't seen him do? Finish. VAR and officiating and questions about goal line technology be darned and everything. He has not officially scored a goal with the Colorado Rapids as well. I still think there's a lot of room for improvement in terms of what the team's doing defensively with Max Schu and with Alex Gerschbach getting settled and everything. So I think there's room for improvement. Is it room for improvement for them to overcome this bad start and not having Jack Price? I think it's a valid question. Mark, you're normally the guy I go to for injury news on this and everything. What do you know and remember about Achilles injuries and everything? And what does this mean for Jack Price in terms of his recovery? Where the heck do the Rapids go in midfield sans him?
The midfield question is something that we spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about because midfield death was something I was really worried about. Achilles injuries are a 12 to 15 month recovery. The good news about an Achilles injury versus a knee injury is, in my experience, estimation, conversations, and in injury watching, is that players tend to come back from them without a loss of speed or mobility. They're always tender and worried about it, but repeat knee injuries are not uncommon. Repeat Achilles injuries are really rare. They tend to surgically repair and replace them, strengthen them, and they're good. I think a thing that's related that we should just mention, not to call anybody out, this is just the way it goes sometimes, is it's been widely reported that the grass at Dick's Sporting Goods Park was replaced in advance of this game and was still kind of taking to the new surface. And if you noticed in the first half, there were a number of really big divots brought up. There were a lot of players who seemed like they were slipping and sliding out there. And so questions have to be asked about whether the field conditions didn't play a part in this. But there's no way to say that, like, you know, anybody's responsible for that. Teams replace pitches every season. Opposing teams have higher and lower quality fields all the time. And I'm a guy who watches a tremendous amount of USL soccer, in which you're always playing on some terrible field or some weather-beaten old turf or a baseball diamond or something, you know, potentially even worse than what I've just mentioned. So I'm not calling anybody out, but the field was playing slippery and difficult for a lot of players, and I think that there was probably some factor in that.
The field was replaced after the Fish concert series, Mark, last offseason. I don't believe that it's been changed since then, but understandably, as I've reported, listeners, the club could be doing an internal study about changing up some of the things that they do, both procedurally, infrastructure, and everything around the training pitches and the stadium pitch as well. Obviously, the pitch that they replaced, I believe, was the first time that that's happened in the history of Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Like, it was still the original grass from 2007, I believe. I'd have to go back and check my my notes that I had on reporting from that from last year. But, you know, it's the, I think it's more than just, is the grass new and is it settled and everything, Mark? This was the 14th coldest winter in the time that whatever outlet that I tweeted that out recently had been recording it, which was much, much prior to the start of Major League Soccer in 1996 and much prior to Dick's Sporting Goods Park as well. And I don't know that the fields that they have, both what the club's been training on at Commerce City and the stadium pitch as well, have weathered that as well, or maybe put in a position to succeed with that in regard. And then maybe what's happened in the last couple weeks is kind of a reflection of those fields coming out of that. In that regard, I feel like Dick's Sporting Goods Park, like the entire training facility itself, is in its own preseason form. And I think it's fair for questions to be asked, Mark, because there are other teams in MLS and around the world that have to deal with worse conditions and everything. Like as cold as the weather may be, as much snow that DSG probably got over the year and everything, we still get a lot of sun compared to Scandinavia and compared to Russia and compared to Minnesota and the Canadian teams and New England, albeit New England plays on turf. And so I think it's a fair question of what the club could be doing better from that standpoint, so that when you do have these difficult circumstances, you're able to better withstand it from that standpoint and everything. Mark, would you like to amend? Mark, be an optimist and tell me, is there anything that we can look forward to the rest of this? There are so many Rapids fans, Rabbi, who feel like four games in, Price is out, 1 point, struggling to score goals and everything, the season is over. Is there any optimism, or are you joining me on team, not making the playoffs?
Well, I didn't think we were going to make the playoffs before we had the injuries. I thought we were going to be finishing somewhere around 10th to start the season anyways. So I'll keep that prediction. I'm not pessimistic on the season. I don't think you could write it off. It's still too early. The worst season in recent memory, and I've gone back to kind of rethink it and think, like, am I wrong about this? But it's definitely 2019. The 2019 season was far and away worse than other seasons, mostly because they started with 11 straight games without a victory. And at that point, there was nowhere to go. Like, no matter how well Connor Casey did as the interim manager, like, he couldn't dig them out of that hole. He did a yeoman's work, but they weren't going to make the playoffs. That's, I think, the way we're kind of, like, looking at things, which is, if they can play a little bit better than in 2019, they could stay in the picture for the mid-season transfer window. There's another thing that always happens when a team is struggling at the beginning and there's an early injury, which is it's an opportunity for a younger player to rise to the challenge. I think the resurgence of Cole Bassett in this game, plus the continued talented play of Connor Ronan, means that we've got like a nice pair in the midfield that if some of the other players can start to capitalize on, like Diego Rubio, who really got some his first kind of sea legs in this match. Jonathan Lewis got back in for the first time. Maybe if he can, turn it on and have a productive season like last year, or a more productive season than last year, this team could be relevant. But we really are looking at a situation, Matt, where Diego Rubio needs to be as effective and dangerous and dominant, I'll even say, as he was last year, just for the team to stay afloat mid-table. Anything short of that, and this team is in really, really big trouble. But I do think four games in, it's really too early to write this team off. Even though the next four games are going to be tough, I do think they can take points there. But I don't really, to be honest, Matt, I don't really like having to play the optimist in our duet here. Like, I honestly, it would be easier for me to play bad cop and for you to play good cop in my heart, because, when we preview Austin, which is next week's game, like, I'm not going to be positive. I'm not going to have good thoughts about a road game in Austin against Verde, at a time when they're really kind of starting to, get it together and come into their own. So there are things to watch, but I do think that, like, if you're a Rapids casual and you really feel like pessimistic about this team, you've got good reason to be.
there's a thought that I've been having, Mark, and I can't remember who I've said it to or where I've written it, and maybe I haven't posted it on a public medium, so I'll say it out loud. This is a thought that I had even going back to January that's popped up, you know, once every couple weeks or something. I thought that there's an outcome this season where the Rapids miss the playoffs, are potentially less competitive for the playoffs than they were last year, but is still a season that has some meaning and that Rapids fans can have some optimism going into 2024. And that was based on the idea of if you just play the kids and focus on the youth movement combined with figuring out the timeline for the existing veteran core that you have and how much leash they have left with the team, and then you lose, but ultimately you make progress. So, you know, Mark, let's say, you know, let's say that Diego Rubio now has to step into the midfield due to Jack Price not being there and him having some purpose in the same way that we saw last year with Price missing, what, all but, I think, 17 games last season as well. Yapi starts. Let's say he gets 2,000 minutes combined for the first team between all the different competitions the Rapids are going to be in. Let's say he scores like 8 goals. We would say that that would be a massive him stepping forward, even if there are long stretches where he's ineffective or stretches where he plays well performance-wise but doesn't get the results like he has this season as well, and then periods where he looks like a chicken with his head cut off, like we saw from Ralph Prizzo at times last year, like we saw from Sam Vines in 18, like we saw from Cole Bassett in 2019, for example, or Cole Bassett in 2018, excuse me. And then you combine that potentially, Rabbi, with Ralph Prisso and Max potentially dueling for that other midfield role alongside Connor Ronan and Cole Bassett as well. Maybe Bassett takes a bigger role from a leadership and then a production standpoint. Whereas I'd still say he was kind of a secondary. He was part of the backup singers. He was the bass player in 2021. Whereas I'd say definitely Kellen Acosta was sitting there, you know, jamming along heavy metal on the guitar, lead solo and everything as the war daddy of that midfield. And then, you know, maybe Calvin Harris works into the wing role now that I think we clearly know that Michael Barrios and Sam Nicholson, their best days in MLS might be behind them as well. And then maybe it's finally time, you know, if we get to the point where the season's, you know, really out of it in ways that I think I don't think the team was eliminated until they had 3 games or 2 games left last year before they were mathematically eliminated. Maybe you give Sebastian Anderson a run out and shut down Keegan Rosenberry or give him an opportunity. Maybe the same thing for Mark Hanich as well. So I think, Mark, if we were to go full, play all the homegrowns and then like Connor Ronan and then Max Schu and then figure out what you have in Illich and everything and then just get and then Cabral to see if Cabral can figure it out and let's just punt on this season, but punt in a way to where at the end of the year, you know exactly what you have in every single veteran, what they're going to give you and not give you in 2024, and you give the kids a bunch of lumps so that they can be better in 2024. I think there is a very plausible and close universe in the Colorado Rapids multiverse that is close to us, our universe, in the central finite curve, where that happens, and Rapids fans are like, okay, I can see that. I'm still going to complain about it on Twitter, but big picture, I get it. And if it means that something's better in 2024, that's something that in hindsight I will be able to accept. Rabbi, am I crazy or is Rapids Twitter going to come after me with torches and pitchforks?
So the only danger always in, and I've always been hashtag play your kids, the only danger in hashtag play your kids is what if your kids are not at the level that they're ready to be and you're not in a development phase, but you're just punting on the season. And you're inflicting torture on a youth team that's just outmanned. You know, they're just getting beasted. I mean, Michael Edwards has not earned a role on this team. He got sent to Rapids 2, and then after an injury, they recalled him and brought him back. It was notable that he was not listed in the 18, and he was not listed on the injury list, but Calvin Harris wasn't anywhere near this team. So I'm guessing he was a healthy scratch according to this. Ollie LaRaz has not been chosen to be called up to the senior team yet. And my assumption is they just don't think he's ready for prime time. So I'll go counter on that just because I think you're right, though. If Moise Bombito gets healthy, he'd be great. And I think we've heard rumors that he's been really, and you've seen him, I think, in training and said he looked really good out there. That'd be a guy that I'd love to see in the rotation. If Calvin Harris can show up and be a player, that would be good. And I don't think it's, even though I'm pessimistic on Darren Yapi right now, I'm not ready to punt on him. I just think maybe sit the kid down for a couple weeks and get him in there, you know, later down the road. But yeah, I mean, my biggest fear, Matt, is that we're chum in the league, and changing up some of our veterans for youth players just makes us a younger version of chum. And to be honest, Matt, I think my deepest, darkest fear, and one of the tabs open on my browser because I'm afraid of it, is we have 1 point in four games, which is an average of 0.25 points per game. The lowest record in MLS history was 2013 DC United, who had 0.47 points per game, 3 wins, 7 draws, 24 losses, right? It's really hard to break that record. That was a putridly bad DC United team, but we need to improve to get above the line of being the worst team in MLS history. And over the next four games, that means we need at least 2 draws or a win in order to start moving in the right direction. And that's actually not that easy. So if the team can't start turning things around right now, forget about building for the future. Forget about making the playoffs. We're looking at just trying not to be the wooden spoon, or just trying not to be the worst team in MLS history. And that is as dark as I can make it.
One last practical bit of detail that we'll go on this, folks, and then we'll move on. Mark, I guess the next question is then, this is a difficult circumstance. This is a pressure test in Hell's Kitchen or MasterChef. And what does Porrick Smith do from a cooking standpoint, given that the primary transfer window is still open for a couple weeks and everything? So, Mark, there are updated rules to the season-ending injury replacement player acquisition process, and that's something that the Rapids certainly would be eligible to pursue with Jack Price now out for the season. So here's the full list that you have, listeners, here from MLSsoccer.com. A club may replace an injured player that is on the season-ending injury list with a replacement player in accordance with the parameters below. The club will remain responsible for the injured player's full salary budget charge. I think Jack Price was at $725K last year, Mark. We don't have the numbers yet for 2023. Clubs will only be able to receive salary budget relief paid out of the club's own pocket, put a pin in that, for a season-ending injury replacement under the following parameters. 1. The injured player must be formally placed on the season-ending injury list prior to the opening of the secondary transfer window. Previously, teams were required to designate a season-ending injury prior to the close of the primary transfer window. Rapids have plenty of time for that to happen, Mark. The replacement player must be clearly designated as season-ending injury replacement at the time that the player is added to the club's roster. Season-ending injury replacement player must be acquired after the related injury occurs and must be added in time for the roster freeze date, which is September 13th. Plenty of time for that. Salary budget charge of the replacement player may not be more than the player who suffered the season-ending injury, so $700K roughly for Pricey. If the injured player is placed on the season-ending injury list is a designated player, not relevant. Jack Price isn't a DP to my knowledge. The replacement player's charge will not be charged to the club salary budget. The club is only allowed to sign one such replacement player per MLS regular season, MLS league season. Mark, given all that information and given the previous rules, I believe had to be that you are capped at $250K from a budget standpoint. Mark, with these circumstances, with these conditions of this challenge, should Porrick Smith choose to accept it, what can he cook up that could possibly be an addition to the team that would help the team or remotely be a replacement for Jack Price? Or do you look elsewhere with that replacement player and you just allow Connor Ronan to be better than what Brian Acosta was last year at the six?
I mean, I think, you know, if you think MLS teams have finished their roster building for the year, then you don't follow Tom Bogert on Twitter. The LA Galaxy signed Julian Aude, an Argentine youth international from Lanús, today. Earlier this week, or just a couple days ago, LAFC were reported to be in talks with Mateusz Bogusz from Leeds United. He's on loan in Ibiza. There was a move of a youth international, Nathan Worth, to from RBNY to Tulsa. In one of my favorite quotes, again, just in the last couple of days, Lewis O'Brien from Nottingham Forest were signed by DC United. Wayne Rooney saying the most Britishism that Wayne Rooney could ever say. Bringing him in on loan from Nottingham was a great bit of business. There's something about the phrase great bit of business, Matt, that I really like. It just feels very English. But, like, teams are making moves. I think the fear that I always have is the Rapids don't typically make moves at this phase in the game. And these teams that we just mentioned, I mean, DC United are probably not one of the stronger teams, but they definitely want to be building for this year or next year. But I also mentioned LA Galaxy and LAFC, who are, you know, big swinging, free spending kind of teams. The Rapids are not that. And feeling pressure to make a youth signing out of South America means you're going to spend a lot of extra money. And that's not the MO of the Rapids front office. There are not, like, top-notch, experienced European players available right now. The players that I all announced are young players out of South America or afterthoughts on the U23 team or whatever that are, like, they're going to come good in 2 years. So the question that you asked, Matt, is there any help coming immediately that's probably a game-changer? Probably not. Those guys are well-identified across the league. They're either too expensive or they're years away from being ready. And so I don't think the help is coming. The other alternative are those Giles Barnes, Sean St. Ledger, Zat Knight level signings where you sign flotsam and jetsam veterans that nobody else wants who might solidify a team because you just don't have any options. I pray to whatever deity all of us are worshiping these days to get the Rapids through this rough period that the Rapids don't make one of those signings because those are the worst and I do not like them.
Colorado Rapids have announced they have brought back legend Colin Warner to replace Jack Price. No. It should be pointed out, folks, I did get it confirmed that as well, in addition to that, should the Rapids go through that process, put Jack Price on the season-ending injury list and then sign another player, that they would be able to do so with an international roster spot. So the INT slot that Pricey is currently occupying would be made available to sign that player. What you do after, assuming that player doesn't just sign a one-year deal and you want to bring him back from an international roster slot standpoint, is a problem for future Porrick Smith and future Rapids front office to deal with. One last note, Mark, I mentioned in the intro, but we both finally got it confirmed. Listeners, we had some confusion going into roster compliance day where the PIDs were in terms of international roster slots, given all the signings that they had brought in, everything. And Rabbi and I got it confirmed earlier this week that Danny Wilson and Brian Galvan both acquired their green cards prior to this season. So that was where I think it was 9 and 7, Mark, where that we thought they had 9 international players based on the new signings and players' INT statuses from 2023. And then so you combine that with not acquiring any new international roster slots, but 2 players getting their green cards and everything, they're compliant from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And that does include Marco Ilić as well, folks. So the Rapids are even right now in terms of international players and international roster slots. One would become available should Price be put on the season-ending injury list. So maybe that opens the door. Maybe that provides a little bit more flexibility, Mark, that they could sign a player who technically would be an international player. I still think the biggest concern there is that everything from a salary standpoint that the Rapids are paying would be out of pocket. And I continue to, while we've seen the Rapids exercise new financial levers in the offseason with transfer fees and bringing in players and bringing in a DP center back in Andreas Maxue and everything, I'm not sure this was part of the budget planning, Mark. And I'm not sure. Price is a great value, Mark, at 725K. I think on his best day, he is better than Alexander Ring. And Alexander Ring, I think, was making 950K last year. I'd have to look that up. Maybe I'm wrong there, folks. But he was a DP for Austin, a tammable, a buy-downable DP for Austin right now. So again, you're talking about, can the Rapids bargain hunt find somebody good as Price at that valuation or less? Can they also give up some league assets or pay more out of pocket to acquire that player in addition to having to pay out of pocket for that player's salary as well? Those, I think, are all valid questions and everything. Again, could they get a, could they get a Sam Cronin level player, Mark? Could they get a Nick LaBrocca to just kind of plug that hole possibly?
Oh, I would love a Nick LaBrocca. I would love them to bring back Nick LaBrocca. That'd be fine with me.
I'm pretty sure Nick LaBrocca is like 45, Porrick Smith, if you're listening.
Hey, I'm 46. What are you trying to say?
I don't know that
you don't want me out there either.
Yes. So I think that's a question, Mark. I don't know that you go get a like-for-like replacement for Price because, well, again, it's not his best position of the place that he's the most force multiplying, Mark. Mark, I think there's an argument right now that Connor Ronan's been the best player on the team so far through these four games. And so if you have that player, albeit playing slightly out of position, is there another position that you could go and deal with given you've got three hamstring injuries to the three of the five fullbacks that you have on the team as well? You know, I think you could get a better, you know, break glass in case of emergency right back, in that case, then you could an upgrade over Connor Ronan that would then put Ronan in there. Because I think you've seen enough from Yappy that he deserves playing time to where then you could move Rubio into the midfield where we saw he was extremely effective as well with a number nine in front of him. And then that solves some of your depth issues that you have in midfield as well. I think, honestly, Mark, I think the biggest weakness you have right now is maybe at the wing position because you've got old man Barrios up there. You've got Sam Nicholson, who's a known quantity and does a few things really good well, but he's not an above replacement starter in this league as well. Kevin Cabral continues to not start on this team, which continues to baffle me. And Jonathan Lewis is, again, a known and defined quantity and everything. Could you get somebody that brings some?
It doesn't baffle me, Matt. Apparently, after training, during training, he's just not good enough. But keep going.
Yes. So, and we know what Jonathan Lewis is, and he's a defined quantity that we know is capable of doing amazing things in this league and everything, but we know, like, 10 goal contributions would be fantastic for Jonathan Lewis, and there's probably no way that he's ever getting to 12, even if he starts every single game and is fully healthy and plays 90 minutes and everything. And so, could you find somebody at that number that brings you something slightly different that would be another tool on Robin Fraser's Batman utility belt that would be more useful than what you have in midfield when, honestly, Mark, again, if we're tanking on the season and giving Max and Ralph Prizzo a proper run out, I feel like it's a better option than bringing back Colin Warner.
Yeah, I mean, I like all the options. We basically have the rest of the season to start rearranging deck chairs on this team and figuring out exactly what would get the most out of this. I just wanted to make one fact check and one last comment, and then we should probably preview and get out of here. Before I give our listeners a full disclosure advertisement break in the middle. One is Alexander Ring was $1.64 million last year, so you underestimated his value. I do think that Ring and Price bring slightly different things to the table. Ring a little bit more mobile and bulldoggy and defensive, and not quite as ridiculously good at free kicks and corners. But then again, it's Jack Price, so nobody's as good at free kicks and corners. So they're not exactly like for like, but that's that's nitpicking because nobody is like for like with Jack Price because he's among the very best in the game at locating a cross or a free kick. And then the other thing that I was going to say is my favorite part of the roster disclosure that the Rap has provided to us several weeks into the season, which means the Rapids don't actually disclose their roster to the media or the public. They just tell everybody they're compliant and say, we mean it. We really are compliant. And then only 3 weeks later do they actually show how they're compliant. My favorite piece of it was the final line, which was written in italics, Matt, from the Rapids, which says, Calvin Harris is in the process of acquiring his green card. Because he began the process this year, once it is granted, he will not count as an international this season. I love that just because MLS rules are always about secret envelopes and unknown discovery rights that teams don't have the right to know. There's always some sort of bizarre chicanery going on. By the way, bizarre chicanery might be a decent name for this week's podcast. But you've always got good other options anyways. I just think it's patently absurd that you can say, like, well, we don't have the paperwork from the government, but we're surely going to get it this year, and therefore it's good enough for MLS. We pass the rule, right? Like, in no other league are you non-compliant on February 24th, but you promise the league you will be compliant at some point in the next couple of months, and Don Garber and crew go, good enough for us. You know what I mean? Like, that's to be honest, that's ridiculous. That makes no sense. You're either compliant on the day in which you have to be compliant, or you're not. There's no, like, we're gonna be compliant, right? Like, you know, Your Honor, I was gonna lower my car speed from 95 to 55 when I got into that speed zone. I wasn't there yet, though, so cut me some slack, man. It doesn't work that way.
I'll pay my taxes when I'm dead.
Right, I've declared a free country to myself, and therefore I'm not subject to the laws of this nation. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Anyways, let me share with us the ad break. Matt's still getting broken in on this ad break idea. Holding the Highland is a reader-supported publication. We do this out of love, but website hosting and buying gas to go to training ain't free. If you value what we do, consider becoming a paid subscriber at just $42 a year or $5 a month. That means you support all the great work we do, which is this podcast and also Backpass, sometimes weekly, sometimes bi-weekly article covering all the aspects of the Colorado Rapids. This week's Backpass is dedicated to the recent unpleasantness of the team. And of course, also, I will be doing a long essay about our friend Joan Dobrzynski, who is not feeling well. So she gets a big shout out in this week's Backpass. So look for that to drop tomorrow morning. For $5 a month, it's the price of a Frappuccino. You can afford it. A yearly subscription will get you some discounted or free merch from us this year. A beer mug or stein, design, patent pending, and some behind the paywall articles. You'll be supporting citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Matt, let's talk about this upcoming match.
Before we get to that, Mark, I do want to point out Joan Dobrzynski. Joan, I apologize. I'm not sure how to say your last name. Dobrzynski.
I think it's Dobrzynski. Because I've hung with Joan a little bit and been forced to try and pronounce her last name. So,
Joan Dobrzynski, Mark, was not able to make the game on Saturday. She's fallen ill with leukemia. Cole Bassett had a nice comment on that and everything. She's been one of the diehards up there with Mark Johnson out there training every single day. You know, one of the best supporters that we've had in the team, certainly in the time that I've been covering them and everything. And so I know the club's thinking about her and trying to get her a win and hoping that she's able to overcome this and what's going on with her, the hospital and everything. I just want to say we here at HTHL are fully supporting that. And Joan, hopefully you make a full recovery and this isn't something that, you know, hopefully this isn't too bad for you. Hopefully it's set up to where you're able to watch the game this coming Saturday. And hopefully you're able to make a recovery where you're able to return where you properly belong, which is at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, watching the Burgundy Boys. Listeners, this coming Saturday at Q2 Stadium at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the Verde and Black. Austin currently sitting sixth in the Western Conference. They have 6 points off of 4 games played, 2 wins, 2 losses, and they have a goal difference of -1. At Q2, they are 1-1-0 this season. Mark, can you guess where the Rapids sit in the Western Conference?
14th, dead last.
14th, baby. 1 point off of 4 games played, 3 losses, 1 draw, and a goal difference of -6. And away from DSG this season, they are 0-2-0. Mark, Austin got off to kind of a rough start. We documented their failure to qualify for the next round in CONCACAF Champions League, losing out to Violeta. But they lost over the weekend to Houston by a score of 2-0 in a Copa Teos game that didn't actually count towards Copa Teos because unbalanced schedule and everything. Sebastian Driussi, obviously their big MVP candidate that they have as the number 10, who's still their main chance creator, their equivalent of Emmanuel Reynoso, and given Diego Rubio's movement to the midfield, possibly even their Diego Rubio comparison there. Diego Fagundes is his main, is the Robin to the Driussi Batman that you have there, and Emmanuel Rigoni is kind of their equivalent of Kevin Cabral in that he's DP, they paid a lot of money, he came with a lot of hype, and hasn't really done a whole lot, despite his highlight reel looking particularly impressive. They've got some injuries at the at the center back position as well, Mark. Julio Cascante has been out. They actually started the aforementioned Alexander Ring at the center back role. They've also got Pereira, who's their number one overall pick in the draft where the Rapids wanted him or Calvin Harris, but ultimately got Philip Mayaka as well. So he's been in midfield and kind of bulldogging it in a Connor Ronan-y kind of way. And Yossi Zardes, who has yet to score a goal for the team, actually got benched over the weekend for Maxi Urruti, basically man bun, cheaper version of Diego Rubio and slightly taller as well. And then Brad Stuver is in goal as well. Mark, this is still a good team on paper. This is a team trying to figure it out. This is a team that probably has a CCL hangover in the same way that the Rapids had a CCL hangover last season. And that being said, I could not think of, to your point, Mark, about Young Chum, I could not think of a a better open goal, easy win to have over the weekend after that for Giussi to score, for Yossi Zardes to open up his Verde account and everything, then the Colorado Rapids and their current state, to say nothing of the fact, Mark, that with Diego Rubio called up for the Chilean national team and Darren Yapi with the U-20s as well, I think Darren could easily play in that game. Folks, both of those players will be unavailable. Mark, I'm not sure where the Rapids are finding, forget a goal, like let alone chance creation on the road, given no Diego Rubio, no Darren Yapi. Cometh the dynasty that is Kevin Cabral and Calvin Harris starting up top as two in, what, a 5-3-2?
Yeah, I don't like this game. This is not who I want to face. Going on the road to Austin is pretty scary. Yes, the loss to Violetta is a big deal, and you know, losing this past week to Houston is also kind of a big deal. But this is one of those underperforming teams that they've got it in their kit, they've got it in their boots to do better than they've done the last two matches out. And this is one of those plays where they're likely to take it out on us. You know, they're likely to beat the Rapids up pretty good. Trying to get right after this. There's a couple of players who are a little soft here that they could do better on. You mentioned Yossi Zardes, who's not quite up to snuff. Emiliano Rigoni, and the one that you didn't mention is Ethan Finley, who is he's the guy they could get. But Owen Wolf has been very good for this team as a new young player that's kind of come into his own and added to this ball club. And that's been a fairly useful, he's a useful piece and a useful cog that they didn't previously have. He's been playing across from Ring in the 4-2-3-1, although Ring, like you said, moved back to center back last week. But Sebastian Giussi is really the killer. He had a couple games where he wasn't quite fully fit or fully clicking on all cylinders last year, but when he's on, he's terrifying. I mean, he's just absolutely put you to the sword. He's one of these really talented MLS players who can do all three things that you need attacking players to do. Like, everyone on the Rapids has a tendency towards a certain thing. Like, Connor Ronan's a good dribbler, but at the end of the day, he's really good at a slip pass. Cole Bassett is a pretty decent passer, but at the end of the day, he wants to put you on the dribble, right? And Diego Rubio is a fantastic shooter and a pretty good dribbler and a pretty good passer, but he's not like a 10 out of 10 at any one of those three skills. Sebastian Giussi on his best day shoots 10 out of 10, passes 10 out of 10, dribbles 10 out of 10. And so you can't stop him, because if you lock him down with two guys, he's going to draw players to you and then to him, and then he's going to slip the ball through to somebody else. So that's the danger you have with Giussi. He's among maybe 5 or 10 players in Major League Soccer who can completely command the game if you let him. Thankfully, in the games that we've seen him play against the Rapids, he has not taken over yet. But, you know, just keep an eye on him. Another thing that's notable to watch with this team, they've got like Nick Lima, Will Bruin, the Dancing Bear, and Diego Fagundes often either starts or comes off the bench. That's a pretty deep bunch of options for the team, we don't really even talk about the Rapids bench because the injuries this week were so significant that we were kind of praying they didn't have to go to the bench too much. That's always a thing to note that this is a team that is, you know, 14 or 15 players deep, where the Rapids are basically 9 players deep, to be honest. So we're going to Texas and we're going to take a loss, and hopefully we can come home with some tacos from Torchy's to soothe the burns.
Mark, there's a Torchy's on Broadway. I go to Torchy's all the time.
Okay. I don't have a Torchy's here in Pittsburgh. We don't have any good tacos here in Pittsburgh. That's fair, though. You bring up a good point. But I wonder whether tacos, this is a really important question too. I wonder whether a Torchy's tacos in the original state that they're from is better than a Torchy's tacos in Colorado. This is an important question to ask.
Can confirm Guinness tastes better in Ireland than it does anywhere else. But so, yeah, it's good questions, Mark. You know, I look at maybe if they've still got an issue at center back to where they've got guys playing out of position, that was something that Houston was able to take advantage of. And so, you know, maybe there's something there that they can, the Rapids can still create chances. I'm aware that I'm grasping at the one straw that is left here at this as well. So I'm aware of that, Mark. But yeah, this is the perfect opponent and the perfect situation for Austin to get off the side, get 3 goals, get goals from the right people and everything for them to feel good again. I don't know if the Rapids defensively can deal with Sebastian Driussi, given what they're going to be like from a midfield standpoint without Jack Price. I don't know how they're going to be able to create attacking opportunities without Diego Rubio, without Darren Yapi as well. I mean, you know, maybe they're able to get a couple corners, and that might be honestly their best chance, because Ronan's service has been decent. Max Schuh has had a couple opportunities. You know, Danny, hit a post. He could have gone Scottish Salmon against Minnesota over the weekend as well. And you combine that with them not having their center backs, maybe there's some chaos that Chris Sharpie can cook up or something that he can look at with this. But I'm struggling to find where they're really going to do something, Mark. I think the fact that Calvin Harris has not made his Rapids debut in MLS play yet. Maybe he got like 5 minutes randomly against Seattle and I just don't remember it. I think the fact that he's not gotten playing time is a reflection of where he is at on the depth chart. I think Kevin Cabral and him getting the minutes that he's gotten in the last 2 games is a reflection of where he's at from a continuity and a system standpoint relative to Michael Barrios and relative to Sam Nicholson. And so if those guys are lesser than what the Rapids have been playing out, I don't know how they create chances against that kind of team any better. And I don't have a lot of confidence of them finishing them. So I think if the Rapids are scoring, I think it's going to be garbage chaos on a set piece, or it's going to be a great individual moment. And I'm not sure with the players that are going to be missing, anyone other than Cole Bassett can really provide that individually. I will happily be wrong. Mark, this would be the perfect game this would be the perfect game for the MLS scriptwriters to be like, yes, Rapids nihilism, get them all sad and everything. Mark Harrow giving up on the team and everything. Rapids away days prepping all their memes. You know, HTHL going full. This is Hello Darkness, my old friend. For them to say, nah, 5-0 win, down a man or something. Absolute chaos. Fantasy teams going off the wonkers. This is Major League Soccer. This is so MLS and everything.
Nice.
Rapids, like, this would be the game for them to do that. I say that. As I predict, of course, Rabbi, there will be a 2-0 victory for Austin, and they'll be jogging it out with the ball with the fans olaying the Rapids with 20 minutes to go.
3-1 to Verde. All right, all right, all right. Not all right, not all right, not all right for Colorado.
Robin Fraser said in preseason, you know, we're not having a season again like 2022, and we're 4 games in, Mark, and I already feel like the team's already had a season just like 2022.
We may have to improve. We may have to get better just to reach the miserable heights that we reached in 2022. Last note, fact check, Matt, I'm your fact checker today. Calvin Harris played 179 minutes last year and 452 minutes in 2021. He has 6 career starts, 1 goal, 1 assist in Major League Soccer. So he has a little bit of experience, but clearly so far he hasn't turned any heads. Here in Colorado. He also did that for FC Cincinnati, who last year were pretty decent, but in 2021 were hot garbage. And so he earned 4 starts for a team that would throw anybody out on the field if they could run up and down for 5 miles.
Yeah. Mark, let's get out of here. Listeners, if you are somehow still listening to this podcast,
God bless you.
thank you. We get it. Watching a team that loses and is bad and doesn't have a lot of hope right now externally is not fun. And obviously, the last thing you want to do after watching a team play like that for four games is listening to a podcast where we break it down in meticulous detail for an hour and 15 minutes. So if you're still listening to this, we appreciate you. And given Diego Rubio's been hurt this season, you right now are the real MVPs. Listeners, if you like what you heard and want to read what we write, you can check us out at Pittsburgh Soccer Now, at Burgundy Wave, at Last Word on sports.com/soccer, and at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Follow us on all the socials, at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and then for the podcast, at Rapids96 Podcast. You can tweet us questions by adding the podcast account or using the hashtag AskHPHL. Jody Robbins, I hope we answered your question about injuries and everything. I'll hopefully have a piece coming out for BW later this week that breaks it down in a little bit more detail as well. And if you want to get in touch, you can email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to us. We'll see you next week after the Rapids 5-0 victory down a man at Austin.
Probably not. Peace.
Oh, so bad.